our meeting, the conference committee on Senate File 2368 and House File 2588. I think what we'll do is, being that we did receive a letter from AFSCME, I guess I'd like to hear from them if they wanna step up to the table and identify yourself for the committee and then just give your testimony, I guess, on how you feel on the Senate version and the House version. So.
Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee, thank you. My name is Elliot Side. I'm the executive director of AFSCME Council 5. We represent 43,000 state and local government employees throughout all 87 counties of Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity. Frankly, to get right to the point, Mr. Chairman, we support the House language. We think it's much stronger. Our goal here is that we want to make sure that these safety net, state-operated community services, as Representative Junkie pointed out earlier today, continue. And we think that there are a number of issues that happen when there's a potential closing, and that those issues ought to come before the legislature. There's a number of economic issues involved here. There are counties involved. There's the clientele. There's the community. We think it's best to come bring it before the ledge for oversight, and also to see if in fact, as Representative Ward put it earlier, perhaps they do want to put some money to that if there's a problem, or they want to deal with it, or they want to look at some of the other issues related to it. As it relates to the fiscal note, we respectfully take issue with the fiscal note. We don't think that the fiscal note applies. Unless people can tell us they're planning to close places in the next 6 to 18 months, there is no cost to this bill. And if they're planning to close it, we'd like to know about that. In any case, these are important community services. We had a situation, our position on the fiscal note is we think it's overstated I'll say it that we think it's overstated and at best, and we question a lot of the assumptions in the fiscal note. But the other issue on this is, what's the opportunity cost of closing these places? We had a situation where some of the places were going to have to close in St. Louis County, and we were able to work that out between the department and the county to keep the places open. And what we heard from the families of the clients was that our members provide a continuity of care. Our members don't turn over. In the privates that perform the same kind of business, the turnover is up to 40%, and I think the department will verify that. The clients don't get the same level of care. I mean, there's an affordability issue, and there's a care issue. And so we think these are such important pieces to the community, such important safety nets, that before they go out before they go out of business, or before they're relocated, that the folks here who set them up ought to take a look at that. It affects each of your districts. It affects the people who live in your districts. You ought to have a chance to take a look at that and see if you believe it's warranted. And then look at what other issues might be involved. Is it a question of a lack of clients? Is it a question of insufficient county aid, which is leading the county not being able to afford the reimbursement? Those type issues. So that's basically our concern. And we do very strongly support the House language on this. We appreciate the work the Senate's done. We think the House language deals with our intent, which is to get legislative oversight, review, and okay before you close one of these critical facilities.
Any questions of the conference, Senator Burbo?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Side, each and every day this week I've been asked to make more budget cuts in my budget. And believe me, just because you don't like this fiscal note doesn't mean that we won't have to acknowledge it. I mean, it's been signed off by Jim King. So where do I get $4.1 million more dollars?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund. I'm sorry, did I interrupt you? Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund. We think the fiscal note makes assumptions about closing new facilities, and I think the committee ought to ask, are facilities planning to be closed? Because without closing of facilities, there is no fiscal note. So maybe that means that some of these facilities are going to close. Otherwise, there should be no fiscal note on this bill because there's no cost. Now, what it requires is for that we think that the department ought to be able to plan 6 to 12 months down the road and be able to let you know, be able to tell if they're going to have to do some of these things. And in that case, with planning, should be able to come before this legislature and make decisions that are reasonable about the outcomes of this. I mean, after all, you all and your colleagues represent the constituents and the clients in the districts. And shutting these facilities greatly harms the clients and the communities in which those facilities are in. And again, I know that the fiscal note is signed off on. I have no doubt about that. On the other hand, it wouldn't be the first time we disputed a fiscal note. We have come to the legislature before about the issue of oversight on these facilities and other human service facilities. And in the past, the legislature has indicated that it wants some oversight over this. In terms of where the money comes from, at least in terms of our union, we proposed increased revenue from getting revenue from people over $250,000 a year who aren't paying their fair share, closing corporate tax loopholes, and doing a variety of other pieces. Also, if the governor doesn't think those are good ideas, he has the ability to go to reserves or run a lot. We don't think he'll have to do any of that on this bill. We think that mainly what this bill is provide critical oversight to these important facilities and the important services they deliver, if it's children's behavior, if it's mental health, whatever it happens to be. But I don't think that fiscal note's going to come true, Senator, Mr. Chairman and Senator.
Senator Bergman.
Chairman and Mr. Said, you said that you thought the department should be able to anticipate, you know, 12, 18 months out. How do you expect the department to anticipate what a county is going to tell them when they come to renew their contract?
Mr. Said.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, we expect there to be, and we know that there have been ongoing discussions with the clients, with the counties. This is a communications issue, and I think if we keep in touch with the counties in question, see how things are going, check out with the county if it's satisfied with the services, if it thinks it's going to have any reason to cancel the services, that's a reasonable thing to do. And we think the county needs to be planning as well. The county does an annual budget every year. All the counties do annual budgets, as you well know, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, and they do them in the fall of the year. They set their levy limits in September, the upper levy limits in September. They come to conclusions by December. They know what kind of money they have for the next year. The other reason I think that you all should want to receive this information is because there are actions here that are affected that affect other pieces of the budget. I mean, for instance, it's been a continued cut in local government aid and county aid that's caused some of the counties the problems that they have. If people aren't getting critical services, there's a number of pieces of the budget, if it's tax expenditures for local government or direct appropriations or self-sustaining revenue. I forget the exact term that Deputy Commissioner Koistra mentioned.
Enterprise.
Thank you, sir. There are various sources of revenue on this, and I don't see why the counties and the Department of Human Services wouldn't be in communication about what's affordable over the next year. These are folks who can't live without these services, and their families can't live without them either. So I think that's the solution to the problem.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Said, nobody said we didn't want to know. The Senate bill says that there would be notification 120 days prior to closing to the chairs of the and the ranking minority members of the relevant committees, so we would know.
Mr. Said.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, we thank you for that. We think knowing is one thing. Having the ability to act before an action is taken that cannot be reversed, we think that's a different piece, and that's why we support the House language.
Senator Corn.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Said, I just want to explore the fiscal note, because I have some sympathy with the intent of the bill. I mean, first, as my role as a legislator, as an attorney, I've dealt with the regional treatment centers, and I know the services they provide. And parenthetically, my community administrator is from Brainerd, and her father is still a practicing physician in town, so she's talked to me about this from the perspective of Brainerd. I'm trying to, speaking of the committee administrator, Brainerd.
Good timing.
If the fiscal note is real and it reflects a cost of 3.2 in 2009, we don't have the money, and it's not appropriated in House File 1812, so we'd have some problems. So I'm trying to determine the veracity of the fiscal note, and I'd like to see if they have testimony, because I kind of walked in the middle of the human services testimony.
Yep.
But Mr. Stein, is it your position that there's no way DHS can forecast what the intent of the, in terms of the intent of the legislation, they can't forecast a projected cost?
Well, Mr. Chairman, they can't, Senator Cohen, they can't have it both ways. If they can't foresee whether the places are going to close, then how can they establish that those are the assumptions on which a fiscal note is built? So if they can't do that, then how can they establish that that's what the cost of it's going to be? I mean, we're only talking from now. I know you folks may not want to hear it at this point, but you're only 6 months away, 7 months away from starting up again as a session. And so asking them to come back to you before they close a place isn't a large burden. In fact, can be done before the end of the fiscal year. And by the time we get to next January, we've had some turnaround in this economy. We've had an improved economic situation. But it seems to me that the department, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, can't have this both ways. If they can't prognosticate or analyze if there are going to be closings and tell us that today, that there are going to be closings next 6, 12, or 18 months, part of their assumptions are built and that's going to happen. Well, if that's not going to happen, then there's no cost.
I'm not sure I disagree with that. I am concerned with one comment you made, though, and that is that, you know, we'll be back in session in 7-8 months. That being the case, we really don't even have to worry about passing a budget modifications this year, because we'll be back in session next year with a half year to go in the biennium. So obviously we have to budget today for June 30th, 2009. And we just don't have a choice relative to that. So I'm trying to get at the heart of your position. Your position being that DHS can't tell us what's to close or not close in this next year and a half, or the year and year plus of the biennium. And since they can't tell us what they're going to do or not do, it's just guesswork in terms of the cost.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, that is basically my point.
Okay. So hypothetically, if DHS came here and said, Agua Ching is going to, we're going to close half of Agua Ching, or these five programs at Agua Ching, and we can then specify an amount that would be needed for transfer of programs, personnel, whatever, you might be willing to accept that, hypothetically.
Chairman, Senator Cohen, you're talking about the relocation piece of this. No, because the relocation piece would place havoc with the clients' lives, place havoc with the community's lives, and the workers' lives. And so, if I could, Mr. Chairman, the reason we want this to be able to come back to the legislature is it may be the department's recommendation, if you will, that something needs to close or be relocated. You may look at it and decide that service is critical for that area, and you may have a different perspective on it, and you do set policy here as a legislature. And so and money in the budget, you may decide to spend money here and not spend money somewhere else, in order to make that happen. Or you may find out, in fact, there was no reason to do it from your perspective. But at least this way, this body set this program up. and you get to review if this program's going to close or not. I mean, I would, you know, Mr. Chairman and Senator Cohen, I've seen the legislature attempt to deal with issues like deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners. So, I mean, those are certain types of issues. This is closing facilities, killing services off for people, wiping out people's jobs and changing communities. I think that the legislature would want to have some oversight in that.
And Mr. Chairman, don't misunderstand me. I understand that a concern, and probably accentuated more in a rural community than the Twin Cities, would be closure or partial closure of a regional treatment center or a prison or any other state facility where in a smaller town than, say, Minneapolis or St. Paul, that's going to be that much more of a part of the area's economy and job location and so on. But putting that aside, just hypothetically, DHS says, okay, we understand this will rip the community apart. I think Representative Ward, spoke to that earlier. So DHS accepts that. Is there a cost to the relocation?
Is there a cost if there's relocation? I think that's a fact question. I would have to know what the situation is. I would guess there was, but I'm not. I'd have to, you'd have to look at the situation. Don't know what type of facility they're moving from or to. If they have to purchase a new facility, don't knows.
Senator Cohen, we do have somebody from the department here if you want to pose some questions.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I want to get back to Mr. Seitz testifying now.
So that I would need more information to do that. But I can tell you this, that when it wasn't the department, we worked cooperatively with the department to keep the services open in St. Louis County. But when there was the threat of closing there, those families or those clients were critical. The reason those places stayed open and didn't move is because those families made it clear that those clients could not get those services anywhere else in the county. They couldn't get that quality of service anywhere else in the county. And I know you all agree with this, but I'll say it anyhow. And folks who make, working folks, the working poor, should be able to get the same kind of services anybody else does. And these were services that were critical to that county. We worked with the department. We worked cooperatively with them and with St. Louis County, and we managed to keep this all open. But I want to comment on that to the county, but I also want to comment on the quality of the services that are being delivered and are not replaceable in many parts of this state. And I think Representative Junkie and Representative Ward were pointing that out earlier today. And I think, what's the cost of that? What's the cost of going to a place that has 40% turnover and can't offer that family the kind of care for their vulnerable loved one that they're getting in these facilities? That should be something that I would think, and that historically the legislature has wanted to have some oversight and control of. And that's all we're suggesting here, sir.
Representative Junkie, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Questions or comments? I'm listening to Senator Cohen, and I partially agree with what you're saying on relocation. It depends on, like Mr. Side said, where the relocation is. If you're relocating within the same county, or in the Twin Cities, more of a regional thing, but in rural Minnesota, same county, say a lease problem or those types of things, I agree we don't want to lock them into saying, well, come heck or high water, you're staying right where you're at. But you're still, the services are available within the area. But what we're talking about is major moves, and what brought it up, obviously, was the CABS program. All of a sudden there was an announcement made, we're closing Brainerd and we're relocating down to Wilmer. Mm-hmm. It helps me, okay? My community's going to add jobs. Because there's probably, I think, 5 FTEs or something that will be added to Wilmer, even though the total FTEs will be less when you subtract Brainerd out. So, technically I shouldn't be sitting here arguing, but I've been dealing with this for many years with Wilmer and Representative Howes with Aguiching and others around the state. And I know, Senator Berglund, you've dealt with this too over the years and probably since you were first elected like myself and everyone else here. But So some of the relocations, I if it's in the same service area, that's one thing. But to totally move to a different county, a different area, where employees can't travel, you have spouses at work, so the jobs are gone, then the services are gone because the community, again, can't access them because they're geographically too far away, I think is a problem. So that's just a comment. I think there might be some discussion on that relocation piece. But to the fiscal note, again, I think Mr. Side is right. There's assumptions being made here that I guess there's going to be so many closures, relocations, again, out of a geographic area completely that somehow are going to cost money. But even the Senate bill has a fiscal note then, because even your bill has 4 months. So under that assumption that there's a steady stream of closures apparently happening out here, which is what their fiscal note surmises, basically not happening even when the legislature's in session is what the bill is saying, and they're arguing that they have to close when we're not in session. That's the whole basis for the department's argument. Then you've got a four-month fiscal note, too, at that point, which we don't have in front of us, but obviously it's a fraction of what the 9, 10, and 11 fiscal note show.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that there is notice that goes out to employees 120 days before anything happens. So, I mean, at that point they would know, and they would, you know, be giving the notice to the employees, they'd be giving the notice to the chairs, and it would be part of the plan for the relocation or closure of that facility. You know, the legislature actually gave this authority when we had budget cuts. You know, for these regional treatment centers, they presented the plan. We knew what the plan was. We knew the plan included Brainerd. Now, you know, everybody who's at this table might not have been there when that happened, but we knew that it was going to include the Brainerd Regional Treatment Center. And so to say nobody knew that this was going to happen, I think nobody knew exactly when it was going to happen. But we knew it was going to happen, and it was done because it was part of budget cutting. Now, to say that we somehow don't have these costs if we reverse this, I find that hard to believe, being that we got savings when we did it originally. So, and I, you know, I just say again, anybody in this room wants to offer $3.1 or $4.1 million of ways I get savings out of my part of the budget, because believe me, my part of the budget is what is balancing the budget this year. It isn't happening in the tax bill. It isn't happening in the education bill. It isn't happening anywhere else. And I don't get to book tax loopholes in my budget.
Representative Ward.
Senator Berglund, let me just make it clear also, and I understand your passion about your budget. Let me make it clear about this. You know, we're talking about Brainerd. This is about kids and families. That's why I brought this bill forward. And my passion is about children and families that have to go to Canada, North Dakota, or wherever to get services, because now there is not a facility regionally that they can access. So that's my passion, is about the kids that need this very much program that has high-skilled folks and deals with the toughest kids in the state and their major, major needs, that they can no longer have a place to go. So I appreciate and understand your passion. My passion is also about the families and the children. I want to talk a little bit about the notice to employees, because from the time... There was no notice of employees given. Our first letter, Representative Junkie, and my first letter to Mr. Koistra and Mr. Tesner was dated October 1st. That's 150 days out from when the closing happened. And it wasn't even at that time clear that that was happening. There was no official employee, patient, child, family notification prior to 120 days. I talked to Mr. Koistra about, our kids, our Central Minnesota, Northern Minnesota kids that some of you heard testify at one or two of the committee meetings over the House, don't have the service available. Can we work out an arrangement so that we can try to have some kind of services available? What Grainer is closing, and we're going to put 6 beds down at Wilmer, and 6 beds is not going to take care of the kids, the number of kids that we need to have service and families. And I asked about, Mr. Questron, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I asked about relocating costs and if there was a savings of money. And, you know, Judd, do you remember that dialogue that we had about relocating and savings and somehow to work out another maybe a program situation for our children? Mr. Questron indicated that there were real no savings when you're relocating the facility. You know, I wanted to make that very clear. That, you know, we started contacting the department 150 days out, not 120, 150. And to no avail, there was still much questions and concerns regarding the whole scenario until probably January, February, somewhere in there, and they closed in March. My last question, I guess, or my last comment, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being patient with me, Do you know, Senator Berglund, or Mr. Questra, the cost of the Senate language? Do we know that at all?
Maybe if we have if any more questions for Mr. Seib, if no further questions, maybe Mr. Questra wants to step back up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ward, what was your question again for Mr. Questra? The cost of
the
Senate language?
Do we know the cost of the Senate language?
I don't believe there's a fiscal note on the Senate language at all. Mr.
Questra. Mr. Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, there is no cost to the Senate language because on average, it wouldn't be necessarily in every case, there's 120 days lag time between the time we make the decision to close and by the time the closure actually would occur. This also applies to relocations and so forth. I'm not going to suggest that in every single instance that way, but on average. That also coincides with state law that says that we're allowed to keep up to 120 days of reserves. I would not suggest to you that we have 120 days of reserves in every case, but we are allowed to keep up to 120 days of reserve. So on those two bases, we didn't feel like there was a fiscal note to the Senate position.
And if I could just say to Representative Ward, really, if you look at the Senate language, it's really a notification to the chairs of the health policy and health budget division and the ranking minority members. So it's really a notification, not a approval.
So, Mr. Chair, on that point, yeah. It's a amendment added on to the House language. So it has the House language and the 120 days. Okay, it's not an amendment added onto the House language.
No.
It's only 120 day notice.
Right.
Okay, because at one time I was understanding that was an amendment to the House language, not a separate language in itself. Okay.
Any further questions of the department? Senator Cohen?
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Questra. Let me ask, and I'm trying to kind of wrap my arms around this fiscal note. Is this a forecasted expenditure or a direct expenditure?
This is a direct expenditure.
Okay.
We've estimated what it would cost, based upon historical trend of closures over the last 3 years, what it would cost to go forward with a requirement that we cannot close without legislative approval. And if I may say, add to that, because I believe you were out when I testified to this point, technically speaking, the fiscal note should assume that these programs stay open indefinitely because it requires an act of the legislature to close a program under the House language. We felt that's not reasonable. So what we assumed in this fiscal note was that 100% of our closures would be delayed waiting for legislative response. Once the legislature received a request, 75% of our requests would actually be approved. But I would say technically, now we're in the business of rejecting decisions, which may makes me a little bit nervous, but we didn't think it was practical to apply the most the normal fiscal note discipline on that.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen.
If it's a direct appropriation, then it's already in the budget.
Mm-mm.
That's what I'm trying to. So you're saying you're doing it simply as a projection. The direct appropriation is not. There's not a line. There's not a activity or anything of anything else of that sort for relocation currently in the budget.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, we have no appropriation to cover this kind of cost because current law requires us to live entirely under our own receipts. That's the issue here. And in, if I could say, in respect to Representative Ward's comment that why isn't there money saved when we close, it's because these aren't living on general fund appropriations. If you don't apply an appropriation to a service, when a service changes, there's no benefit to the general fund.
Representative Ward.
Mr. Questman, if the law, I think I heard you say something like the law allows, or states that you have to have a 120-day reserve.
It's permissive. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, it's permissive language.
What if that law changed to 240 days or 360 days? Would that help here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, we have permission to go up to 120 days. Currently, I believe we're in the around, I'm going to look to the 60 to 90 days right now. How do we accumulate reserves? Through rate structures that allow us to put money into reserve that go beyond what actual costs are. And I believe that the reason the law says up to 120 days is so that we're not charging significantly more than the cost, and 120 days was thought to be a normal business practice of having cash flow on hand. That really does help us in situations where we have temporary losses. For example, we're waiting for referrals because it allows us to manage through those sort of peaks and valleys of revenues that any program that would be reliant upon revenues would be required to manage through.
Any further questions? Okay, if there's no further questions, a motion would be in order. We have to decide whether we're going to accept the Senate language or which language. Let me ask Senator Cohen this. Which language would we have in front of us here now?
I'm new here.
It's a conference committee of both.
Both.
Language.
So it would be in order for a motion to, if you adopt one or the other. Is that correct?
Or pieces of either. Or anything's in order in a conference committee.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
Unfortunately, as the is the new kid on the block at this, I'm a little bit of a lawyer, and I think I can argue both sides. And I'm not comfortable at this juncture going ahead with the House position, but I'm not quite sure I'm totally sold on the fiscal note.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to inquire from Senate counsel as to, and I haven't had a chance really to talk to Senator Berglund about this either, to see if this, if this is, either or if there is some other way, because I have a lot of sympathy with what's been expressed by Representative Ward,
mm-hmm.
and I guess Representative Junkie as well, obviously, but the displacement in communities,
mm-hmm.
which is not insignificant. On the other hand, as I said, I can argue both sides. I worked closely with Senator Berglund all session on the problems within the health and human services budget. And it's not unique to this session. We've been going through these fights now for a number of years. And Senator Cohen, you serve on Senator Berglund's division, so we deal with that on a daily basis. There's no question the budget responsibility heavily as a consequence of not just the administration, not just the governor, but pressures placed within the legislature as well. you know, that you can't touch the K-12 budget, you can't touch tax aids and credits, and the next place you got the money to touch is human services, and it becomes tough. And to be honest, to the House members, I would suggest that what we've heard from during the conference committee process is how impossible it is for the House to accept the human service cuts and unwillingness to do that. So, I mean, you can't have both ways. And Senator Berglund's become kind of the repository of that, so, or her budget.
Senator Berglund.
And, Mr. Chairman, I might just add that every one of the lines in the budget that I have represent working people also. And it's not to be glibly passed over that the budget cuts that are in that budget don't affect services people receive also. The last time we cut hospitals in my budget, the outpatient chemical dependency services for youth at Riverside Hospital was closed.
Representative Junkie.
Well, thank you. And, you know, before we start making motions or anything else, I mean, I think we're all kind of in agreement. I want to restate the problem. You know, again, the problem is not simply a fiscal one. The problem is a notification problem that we're working on here. And what happened in Brainerd's case and what's been happening in other cases is the department, with their internal working group here in St. Paul, are making the decisions to discontinue programs across the state. And Representative Ward said it, without input from the families or the patients or the communities or the counties or anyone else, they're making these decisions unilaterally, and all of a sudden a notice is sent out. You know, this CABS program we're talking about in Wilmer, Minnesota, you have, and they're coming from the Twin Cities. It's the same problem. You don't have enough services in the Twin Cities either. We have 8-year-old kids showing up in Wilmer with chemical dependency and mental health problems. I'm going to ask everyone in this room, where are those kids going to go if we continue this downtrend in these state-operated services? They're already coming from Twin Cities. They're showing up in the Wilmer camp. These are 8-year-old kids, for heaven's sakes. And so what we're talking about is a notification. Don't just send us a notice that Wilmer or Brainerd or any of these others are simply closing in 3 months without the wise people and decision makers that we have in our committees and this body to at least have a look at it and contemplate what's going on.
Senator Corn.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, you shouldn't misunderstand me that I mean, I do have a sense of this and view this issue as kind of maybe our variation of plant closures,
right,
where some manufacturing facility gets notice from the international company headquartered in Detroit, or, I mean, it, you know, it happened in my district with the Ford plant, where an announcement came out of Detroit, Ford plant's going to close. And I've been involved with that, you know, in my district. And I certainly have an understanding in terms of, you talk about, you know, kids with, whether it be, you know, who had, you know, fetal alcohol syndrome, whatever. There are two of us in the legislature in terms of our law practices, Sarah Betzel and myself, and we serve on the commitment panels, myself and Ramsey and Sarah Betzel and Hennepin, where we represent the people who are the subject of MIRCD petitions in the probate court. And that's been my experience with the regional treatment facilities as an attorney. I mean, I have people a couple weeks when we get out of this place, I've got the calendar coming up and in the probate court, and I have lots of clients who had been hospitalized. So I have a sense in terms of the services offered, you know, these individuals and, again, what it means to the community. Having said that, if we have one more cost forced on the agency at a time when we're just slashing through that budget, what's the consequence of that? And so that's where I'm trying to wrestle with the fiscal notes and the appropriateness
Well, Mr. Chair, the fiscal note again, and I understand, I do think the fiscal note is problematic and probably needs some further review by our staff and others, but again, we need to look at timelines, and maybe there's a implementation date that's out of this biennium. I'm not saying tails aren't a problem either. I understand that. I'm in with our finance chair today, too, as a finance chair over in the House. But, again, I think it's – I keep going back. It's the notice that's the problem. And this isn't unheard of. We actually put in, and we have very few left, but we did have legislative notice was required before divesting or closing a state-owned operated services. That was done. So before, they could sell these properties that they own, they have to come to the legislature. We did that a number of years ago when this started unilaterally happening to regional treatment centers. That started the Ventura administration. All of a sudden, you'd look at a bonding request and you'd see demo requests for buildings on campuses. You're going, oh, wait a minute, what's going on? So we actually did that then, too. So this isn't unheard of, but we have to figure out the fiscal note. But more importantly, how do we go about that notification that's so important to somehow have some oversight in so our communities can be informed, too?
And
Senator Cohen.
And Mr. Chairman, a concern of mine is, if DHS, and this is not directed toward any individual, but just kind of the collective DHS, is like every other agency and simply doesn't want the state legislature telling them what they can do or cannot do.
Of course.
I suppose if I was the commissioner of an agency, I wouldn't want some group of legislators or a legislative committee telling me what to do. So I'm trying to wrestle with that as to whether or not it's an opposition just based upon let us run the agency, as opposed to an actual cost. And certainly the fact that
These are enterprise activities in the bill, too.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand that. The comment I was going to make was that at some point when I looked at the fiscal note, I didn't see Mr. King having signed off on it. But then I threw these fiscal notes in front of me, but then realized that he had. And of course, that suggests a little bit more of a fiscal note imprimatur if he signed off on the department's fiscal note.
And I would just say that this is just my personal opinion, but I don't know how much I know, and I understand what everybody's saying here, but I don't know how much we can micromanage. And I think we're all, I get concerned that when the legislature tries to micromanage everything that the departments are doing, that they kind of hamstring them. But
I'm sorry for being away from the table, Senator Cohen, when we were talking there for a minute, but I wanted to respond just to a couple things about the cost of programming. Many school districts are going through cuts as well, and in our district, in the Brainerd school district, Project School District, that's Senator Corning and I represent, they had to make $5 million cuts next year. And the first thing they did, they went to the staff and said, "Can you help us? Can you give us suggestions? Can you give us ideas?" They went to the people that know the system, and they came up with ideas that saved significant dollars. They worked with the people. They had an open door policy. Representative Junkie referred to it before as notification kind of situation. The talking and working and collaborating to try to solve the problem, to save programs, to save so that we don't have to cut in the Health and Human Services budget. So I wanted to just state that now. I also wanted, Senator Corning brings up a micromanaging departments and things as such, and I understand that concept also. But I understand this: when I was actually negotiating and talking and collaborating and cooperating and working with Mr. Tesner and Mr. Koistra, I was told one day that Representative Ward, I said, "Tell me the bottom line here. When is this going to happen?" "Well, it's not going to happen for a while, and we're not going to have it happen until we hear the bed report." That was on a Wednesday. I didn't hear anything on a Thursday. I didn't expect anything for weeks. Then I got a call from Mr. Tesner on a Friday. This deals with the reports, okay? Mr. Tesner said right early in the morning, because he said he would call me, and he said, "Representative Ward, I just want you to know we decided to close the facility." And I said, geez, that's unbelievable, because I talked to you Wednesday, and she said it was going to be a couple weeks. What did the bed report say? He said, we don't have the bed report done yet. So my problem is also, I understand the fiscal note, I understand the problematic fiscal ramifications here, but I also understand trying to solve significant problems to retain programs by open collaboration, open door policies and discussion, and you know, being straight up with people. I don't want to micromanage either, but I expect people to be upfront and honest and all that kind of stuff as well. So that is another reason why, you know, I'm so adamant and want the house file language on this, because I don't think our families and our kids can or should deserve to have, as has been already said, and much needed services continue to spiral down.
What's the will of the conference committee?
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, I have a problem in that I know you had met, what, several days ago? Or today the first meeting?
No, today's the first time.
Oh.
It was only our first meeting.
Okay,
so
then I don't...
Senator Corey and I have, if I might just interject.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've talked, you know, as the authors of both
yes.
sides.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't feel quite so badly. I was thinking...
this is the first I've seen.
I was thinking I'd come into something, you know, it would have been maybe a couple of other meetings or something. Mr. Chairman, having said that, I would like to suggest, and this has been helpful to have the testimony from, you know, the agency, from AFSCME. It's helped with my understanding. I guess I am not quite prepared to go ahead at this point and would like a little bit of time to think about this. To be honest, I'd like to talk. I know we have a lot of staff here. I'd like to talk to our Senate counsel who cannot be found at this point. So I'm not quite prepared to determine what you know, what I should do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, it would be helpful. I mean, we're not going home for a few days. I'd like the parties to continue meeting with your staff and others too to try and sort some of this out. And I want the authors of the bill to continue meeting too, because I think there's some resolve here somewhere. I mean, I think it could be reasonable, but. I don't think we should just call it quits at this point.
No. And I think that, you know, I think that's a good suggestion. Maybe Representative Ward and myself, I don't know if we're in session tomorrow, but...
I don't think so.
Are you leaving, Linda?
Well, I thought you were done with me. So
yeah.
I was, yeah.
Okay. I think we should probably meet maybe tomorrow with some of the department people that are... And maybe talk about what we can figure out. I think the department has heard the comments here, and so...
And meet with the workers, too.
Right, right. Maybe just recess to the call of the chair.
You can't do that.
Can
tomorrow,
I do that?
No.
You can only do it today.
Oh, okay.
It'll be
now it'll be your gavel tomorrow. Okay. All right. Then we'll adjourn, and then it'll be up to you. To
reconvene another day or two.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.